Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Hey everybody, welcome back. Glad to have you here. I just wanted to start the show by simply saying thank you for listening. Thank you for watching if you're doing this on YouTube. Thank you for just being a part of this journey. Thank you just so much for the attention you've given the previous episodes. So thank you. Appreciate it. So let's jump right into it. I'm going to give you a brief history lesson. And I have to do this briefly because we're on a clock here. But I'm going to talk about Ninja Turtles. The Ninja Turtles. Give you a brief history, and this is public knowledge. This was based on the documentary, I believe it came from The Toys That Made Us, which is a great documentary series on Netflix. I'm not sure where else it's airing, but at least I watched it on Netflix. And Ninja Turtles have a really cool background in terms of how they came to be. So some of this you might know, some of it you might not. So basically what happened was one night, the creators, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman, were hanging out. They were comic buddies, artist buddies kind of thing. And they started goofing around. And one of them, I can't remember who, I think it was Kevin, drew an upright turtle. Yeah, so just imagine a regular turtle standing upright. And then it's got a bit longer limbs. And it's standing upright. It's got the head with the beak style face, just like a turtle does, and it had a mask on, and they laughed their heads off, and they loved it, and they were having a good time, and then they kind of thought, let's draw more, so we did, and we ended up with, you know, a few turtles, drawn upright, again, anatomically correct in terms of turtle anatomy. There was no added muscle or anything like that. You know, you saw the underside of the shell, it was flat and smooth. There was no, you know, belt with ninja gear or nothing. It was just a turtle with a mask. And they decided to make a comic strip. And so, of course, these turtles evolved and they became the Ninja Turtles, right? And they made a black and white comic book out of this. And at the time, in the comic industry, black and white comics are huge. Like, if you had a black and white comic, you were basically printing money. It was a big deal. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Dave Sim and Gerard's Cerebus was so successful. And now I'm going to talk about Cerebus on a separate podcast because, you know, despite Dave being a controversial figure in comics, as a person, he's a really nice guy. I've corresponded with him a few times. It's collected in my book, A Canadian Scribbler, Collected Letters of an Underground Writer. So it's a book that I wrote, which is basically a collection of letters that I had written to other people. That's a whole other topic. But anyway, it's a cool book. Check it out. Buy it. Yay. Okay. So anyway, Peter Laird and Kevin Eastman had this comic book, but they were broke. So they went to Kevin's uncle and borrowed about $1,000 or so and paid the printing bill under Dave Sim's guidance, mind you. They went to him for advice on self-publishing, because Dave was killing it at self-publishing Cerebus. And Dave gave him some advice. Anyway, so they took their uncle's money, or Kevin took his uncle's money, and they went and printed out the Ninja Turtle comic, and it sold like gangbusters. We're not talking millions of copies. We're just, you know, we're talking like high thousands kind of thing. And they're like, wow, you know. And so, of course, they made more, and soon, I think it was Peter Laird who said that they were bringing in, remember this is like the early 80s, so the dollar value had more buying power, but they were bringing in around $2,000 a month. That was enough for them to pay their rent, you know, utilities, do comics all day, and eat macaroni and cheese for dinner, and those are Peter's words. That's what they did, and it was great. And then, of course, you know, turtle mania exploded everywhere. But how did that explosion happen? How did we get the toys? How did we get the movies and the cartoons and all the rest? And so during the early days of the Turtles comic, and it was selling so well, they realized, okay, we have something here. you know, we don't 100% know what, but we know that it's special and we got to do something with it. So it was either Peter or Kevin who went out. I'm pretty sure it was Peter. But anyway, regardless, they went out and they found this guy who represented like intellectual properties to sell to other mediums. And this guy, I want to say his name is Mark, but I could be wrong. Anyway, this guy, he's like, his track history is horrible. Like, he just couldn't really sell anything well, very well. Like, he was just a bad representative in this regard. But anyway, they went with him anyway. Perhaps it was a money issue. Maybe he was the only guy they could afford at the time. I don't know. But they get this guy with this lackluster background, and they say, here, can you please see if this property would be of value in other industries? And they went, and so this guy goes out and does his shtick in terms of pitching and all the rest. And not long after, we get a phone call from this guy, and he's like, yeah, I sold like the rights for some merchandise for the Ninja Turtles. And I think at the time it was some toy stuff slash like stuffed animal stuff or stuffed turtle stuff. and then those items, once they were produced, sold like crazy too. And then of course one thing led to another, and with the success and the name and the branding and all that stuff with the Ninja Turtles, of course it just became now the phenomenon that we know today, and like everybody knows who the Ninja Turtles are. So that's your brief history lesson, the Reader's Digest version, if you will, of this. The conclusion of the story is sort of happy slash sad. I would say bittersweet. Unfortunately, during the years, Kevin and Peter had a falling out. It ultimately led to Kevin buying out Peter's shares, or ownership rather, of the Turtles. I think the price tag that Peter walked away with was around $60 million, which is a lot of money. This is public knowledge, by the way. I have no insider info. And they had a falling out, but they ended up reuniting years later. You know, Peter went down to see Kevin for a visit, and they caught up and a big hug and the whole bit, and it was a bittersweet reunion, and I'm sure these days they're on good terms, especially given the history they had, because they were best buds, you know, and never mind the Turtles, they're as people, they were best buds, you know. So anyway, that's a short version of Ninja Turtles history for you in terms of their background origin of how they came to be and how they became the pop culture icons that we know them as. Anyway, second part, creative stuff. Let's talk creative stuff. Yay! And this is a tip. This is a tip out there for any writers, artists, potters, woodworkers. Doesn't matter what your craft is. I'll talk specifically about writing and drawing, because that's my wheelhouse. And this is where I've had experience in regards to this little tip. So let's talk writing first. Writing, we've all heard of writer's block. You know, I had it once in my life. When I was doing my first book, I had it for 2 months. I was stuck. So the book work itself, that was my first book, A Stranger Dead. The book work itself took about 9 months to write, but it took place over the course of 11 months. In order to complete it, because I had two of those months were writer's block months. And the only solution I had was to write through it. And didn't mean, it meant a little bit of still working on the book, but it also meant just writing. Just writing anything. You know, any story, any nonfiction, journalistic, or journal type piece, just writing in general. And I was able to write my way through it and then go ahead and finish the book. And then a couple of years ago, an artist slash writer who does a comic book series was complaining of artist's block, where he couldn't just like he sat down to draw to work on his comic, and it just wasn't happening. And he just couldn't, for whatever reason, he was just stuck. Like he just his brain to his hand, it just there's the communication there was just not there, and he just couldn't draw this comic that he's done like a bazillion pages of before. And so, he was just wondering what to do. So I talked to him privately and I said, you know what you should do is draw through it, but don't work on the comic. Don't work on something that, you're turning into a commercial product, that you're trying to do really, really well on so that your readers are satisfied and so forth. But just draw. Do some fan art, do some made up art, do some anything art, don't worry about, like, don't publish it, don't, you can share it if you want, fine, but like, just whatever, just, but simply just draw. Draw just for the fun of it. Don't even, don't think about it. And so he took my words and he went ahead and just drew. And I think one of the ones was a Batman piece. It was a piece of fan art that he did just for himself, and he did a couple other things, and he posted them on Facebook, and he hinted at the talk that he and I had privately on that, saying that they put the comic aside and he just started drawing for fun, no pressure, and sure enough, the drawings flowed through his hand, and there it was, and he was able to go back to work on the comic, and everything was fine, because like when it comes to writing and drawing, like or any art form, I would suspect, is you fall into it comes under two categories under a single umbrella in terms of the zone. You've heard about the zone. You got to be in the zone to create. Your mindset's got to be there to create. And sometimes what happens is, yes, you get in the zone and you're writing or you're drawing and it's flowing and it's perfect. And you could, once you're all done, you got this, great piece of writing, or you got this wonderful drawing or wonderful comics page, and you're happy and everything worked out great. But then all of a sudden, there's the other side that happens where you're in the zone and you're doing your thing, and then all of a sudden it's like slamming into a brick wall. Like just like your thoughts shut off completely. And again, the communication between your brain and what you want your hands to do, even writing, you're typing, right? So you're using your hands. And yeah, all of a sudden there's this giant disconnect, which can lead to the aforementioned, writer's block or artist block, which is a horrible place to be. So if that's you, listening to this, if you have writer's block or artist block, write or draw anyway. But do it for fun. Do fun pieces. And a special message to the writers out there, because the industry is very flooded at the moment with material. The writing that you're doing for fun, don't think about publishing it. I mean, just let it go. You don't have to publish every single thing you write. It's not necessary. Do you think an artist publishes every single sketch they do? Did they publish every piece of art that they do? No. I mean, they have maybe their comic book or their art book or whatever. But yeah, the sketches and stuff they do, this is for fun. And they don't publish it. But anyway, we've been gabbing for a while here. It's coming up on about 14 minutes already of just me talking, and you're here for story time. So let's get into story time right now. Episode 6, Cotton Candy Pink. When Trevor asked his mom to buy him the latest in neon fashion, he didn't count on her getting him an outfit that made him look like a gumball. Pink, he had said, all pink. It was a new thing, the guys at school wearing pink. Normally a girl's color, it suddenly became cool for the boys in grade 6 to have splashes of neon pink somewhere on their clothes. You became instantly awesome if you had that, he observed, and it raised you a peg with the girls as well. Never one to do only the bare minimum, Trevor wanted to go all out, but also never the one with any money. He had to rely on his mom's wallet to make it happen. And she came through. She brought the pink. Just the wrong kind. I'm not wearing that, Trevor said the morning he was expected to wear the new outfit she bought him. It was a cotton candy pink t-shirt, black track pants with a cotton candy pink stripe down the sides, a cotton candy pink baseball hat, and a pair of shades with black frames but cotton candy pink arms. You darn well are going to wear it, his mother said. You told me pink, I got you pink. Final sale. This is not going to waste. Everyone will laugh at me. I wanted neon pink. You said pink. I got you pink. Now get dressed, or you can forget rides to baseball this week. That did it. Trevor's team was clobbering all the others in the league, and he was the star pitcher, always getting accolades after each game for throwing them in fast and hard. Trevor got dressed and didn't bother seeing himself in the mirror before leaving. He also avoided what he knew to be a satisfied, even smug, grin on his mother's face because she got her way. When he got to school, it suddenly felt like all eyes were on him. It was almost as if he wasn't wearing any clothes at all and was parading around buck naked. He headed toward the doors to wait for the bell to ring. What's up there, little piggy? Stu called from the four square painted in yellow on the asphalt. You tell me, Chunky, Trevor shot back. What did you say? Steve threw down the basketball, seemingly not caring. It bounced several times and rolled off to the side into a crowd of girls. He marched over to Trevor. Between actually wearing the cotton candy pink and the sudden insult, Trevor couldn't believe what he'd done. Messing with Stu would likely get your face mangled. Hunky? Trevor said. Stupid recovery. So, what, you have a thing for me now? Stu laughed and glanced around. Those within earshot started laughing too, and soon a crowd started to form around them. No, no way. You said hunky. Steve drew out the word, and Trevor immediately felt his cheeks flush. I said chunky. He didn't mean to shout it or defend himself so quickly, but there it was, right there out in the open. You saying I'm fat now? Stu didn't waste any time and gave Trevor a shove. The jolt of the impact was harder than Trevor expected. No, I said. His legs turned to rubber. I'll show you fat, Stu said and moved in with both arms wide as if he was going to give Trevor a bear hug. Whether it was instinct or not, Trevor knew that hug was meant as a takedown. He jumped back a step and Stu missed his grab. Without thinking, Trevor popped him in the mouth. Unfazed, Stu's eyes went wild and he dove in again, this time tackling Trevor around the waist. The two hit the ground, Stu on top, his weight putting pressure on Trevor's chest, making it difficult to breathe. Get off, Trevor said, and smacked Stu again in the mouth. It only made things worse. Stu grabbed him by the shoulders and pulled him partway off the ground and slammed him back down. The back of Trevor's head hit the asphalt, and he fought the sudden burst of black stars that danced across his vision. He cut loose and punched Stu anywhere he could land his fists. Some hit him in the face, others in the shoulders and chest. A pair of big hands wrapped around Stu from behind, and he was hauled off. It was the gym teacher, Mr. Matthews. Enough, Mr. Matthews shouted. He tossed Stu to the side as if the heavier kid weighed all of 5 pounds. He reached down and helped Trevor to his feet. You okay? Yeah, I guess, Trevor said. It was then he noticed Mr. Matthews wore a cotton candy pink t-shirt too. Thank you for sticking around to the end of the show, to the after-credit scene, so to speak, the post-credit scene. Well, this will be our MCU post-credit stuff. Let's call it, let's label it that. And that way, the show will grow huge. No, I'm just kidding. All right, anyway, here's a little piece of ironic character flaw that I have. And then the key word there is irony, or the ironic part. And that's this. I've written 40-plus books. Fiction and nonfiction and poetry. And I could do that, no problem. I could tell you a story on paper. And it's, and you know, if you check my reviews, yeah, 9 times out of 10, they're pretty good. So, you know, I could do that. That's fine. But if you and I are having a beer together or sitting across each other from a bonfire and you're like, AP, tell me a story, or, you know, man, suddenly I get tongue-tied, I give an effort, I give like 5 sentences, and they're horrible sentences, and I can't relay a story verbally very well. And I'm talking entertaining story, like what happened last Saturday night when you guys, you know, did a pub crawl and you ran into this dude on the street or something, you know, like those types of stories. I can't tell those types of stories. I just can't, you know, even if I have experienced such a story. Yeah, it just verbally, nope. But if you ask me to write it out for you, I could do it. So it's kind of strange how that works, you know, the written versus the verbal. So that's what's ironic about me as a storyteller, is I could tell you a story through words or through comics, but to tell you a story verbally, like an engaging story, you know, that lasts like a good 5 minutes, and there's laughing moments and emotional moments, and, you know, good, how those good verbal storytellers do their thing. Yeah. Sorry. Can't do it. So anyway, that's what is ironic about me. And I thought it might give you a chuckle. So there you go. So anyway, thanks for sticking around. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, comment, anything that gets the algorithms pumping. So, hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you on the next one, which is episode 7. Here we go for the big thunder crash.